Hey y'all, Darius Rucker here. You know, a lot of people ask me, what inspires your music? And one of the big things is a strong sense of place. That's why I love my home state of South Carolina and want to share the awesome things it has to offer. From the beautiful mountains down to the sunny coast, it's got it all. Not to mention two of my personal favorites, great golf and amazing food. Come see why I love this place. Visit discoversouthcarolina.com.
Welcome to another hard-hitting L. Telling John's La Liga Weekly. When I say hard-hitting, I don't mean we'll literally punch you in the back of the head if you get in our way. We're just going to slag off the old West Ham. I imagine little Messi saw Asier Villalibre playing his trumpet on the pitch at the end of the Super Copa final and thought to himself, I wish I'd punched him in the face. Or grabbed his trumpet and stuck it up with Asier. Of course, the animal rights people have been on, claiming that knocking Villalibre to the ground endangered the well-being of the family of owls that live in his beard. Yes, Athletic won the Super Copa. Just as Griezmann comes good, Iñaki Williams upstages him. It was also the Copa del Rey weekend, and the La Liga clubs have been falling like Jordi Alba defending a free kick. So that meant that Real Madrid had a weekend off, so Odegaard, Vinicius, Valverde got a much-needed rest. Terry's been bursting to get this one off his chest for weeks. We've had a couple of La Liga sackings since last week's podcast. It hasn't started too well for Abelardo, whose new Alaves side started with a 5-0 defeat in the cup. And a weekend free of La Liga gave Terry the chance to catch up with the English Premier League, where Liverpool and Manchester United demonstrated that all other football leagues pale into insignificance. The Germans, the Italians, the Spanish, they know nothing of football, as has been demonstrated over the years. Now, our lawyers would like us to point out that we don't approve of violence, we don't approve of trumpet playing in a group in the pandemic, and any slight on beards in the aforementioned introduction was purely an act of jealousy on the part of a 49-year-old. Old man who can't grow anything more than a goatee. Thank you to the Patreons. We've got another Cash for Questions round coming up. We've taken some questions just from the Patreons. Sorry. But, you know, they give us money. Sajid is the latest to join the gang. So thank you very much for your contribution.
Thank you.
Thank you to everybody. Patreon.com/LTEL. And then you can join in from, I think it's a fiver a month, you can join in from. And then you get some extra stuff and you get to, you know, jump the queue and that kind of thing. Yeah, that's where money gets you. Shall we talk about, Terry, shall we talk about the Super Copa final would be the obvious. So here's the big question. Did you manage to watch it on a decent feed?
Oh, great. It was the longest 6 hours of my life. That's how long it took to watch that game. For some reason, the first two games I was able to find, I know it's wrong that we do it, but it's not available in this country. And it just seems weird now, doesn't it? Sitting there thinking, there's a game on I want to watch on television and I can't put the remote on and watch it. We are spoilt, so I had to delve into the dark world of streaming again, and it was awful. Not the game. The game was good. My experience, as I say, it took me about 6 hours to watch it. I had different nationalities doing the commentaries. I kept losing the feed, jumping onto another feed. It delayed. The commentary was ahead of the game on some of them. Then it was stopping and starting. It was a thoroughly miserable evening, if I'm being perfectly honest. It took forever. The last thing I wanted was extra time. We got that. So I meant I had to endure another 2 hours to watch the extra 30 minutes. It was a disaster. But I managed to catch the majority of it. And I managed to catch the important parts, particularly the featuring Jordi Alba.
The bad news then, Terry, is that I just watched it on Twitter. I literally just put Twitter on and put Barca stream, and it was there and people were streaming the game. Now, I don't know whether there was no geo, it was the American commentary for the vast part of it, and there's no geo restriction on it. So it seemed that even though I'm in the UK, it would seem that they hadn't done anything to deliberately to stop you watching it. I don't do anything clever. I didn't sign up for anything. I literally just put it and watched it. So I started watching it on my phone, which is obviously not ideal because it's that big. And then I transferred onto my iPad. Someone did say it was the messy red card justified, but I'm thinking, don't know, because I'm watching it on a tiny tiny screen.
No, it was.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it got. Well, shall we do that first? No, let's do the story of the game first, shall we? And then, and then we'll move on. So it was a cracking game, wasn't it? We've derided this tournament, to be fair, haven't we? And we've made fun of it, but the teams have been up for it, haven't they? And it was a cracking game last night. They were desperate to win it, both teams.
Well, I think one in particular, I think the Athletic Club embraced it more than anybody else. Hmm. And you could see that in the celebrations when they beat Real Madrid, you could see it in their determination. Maybe it's just a touch to do with the fact they've got a new manager who's come in. So everyone's still on that, you know, honeymoon period where players love to take an opportunity to create a good first impression. And they've been working so hard and they've played so well. You saw the celebrations when they beat Real Madrid. You saw the celebrations when they managed to defeat Barcelona. And I think out of the four teams involved in it, they probably took it the most serious. To them, it was a genuine cup final, wasn't it? A chance to win an honour, to go on their records as being Super Cup winners in 2021. And I think they, you know, they showed the form that has been lacking for most of this time under Garitano. And under Marcelino, we're seeing a genuine Athletic Club again. So I thought they embraced it more than anybody else. And they, you know, they had to do it the difficult way. I mean, it was to reply as quick as they did from the first goal certainly helped them, didn't it? Griezmann opening the scoring and then, you know, DeMarcus capitalising on a poor defending from Jordi Alba. And from then on, it was a competitive game. And it's... I wouldn't go as far as to say they fully deserved the win, but it was in the balance. And for, you know, Athletic Club to be competitive, as they were, against Barcelona, who had been in good form, having beaten Real Madrid in the previous game, says a lot for, you know, the direction that the team are going in at the moment. Slightly changed, of course, since Marcelino took over, the 4-4-2, players like DeMarcus coming back in. And the players have embraced the system. Meunier is playing well in a position that we wasn't sure he would particularly enjoy. Marcelino is getting the best out of him. He's obviously made him feel as if he's important. He's the leader. Marcelino is doing all the right things at the moment. His enthusiasm and energy, you can see it. It's transferred itself rather than what we saw from Garitano, who was pretty subdued on the touchline. Marcelino is, you know, he's in there amongst the players. He's celebrating the goals. He looks like a manager that's really... He looks like a manager who's really pleased to get that job. And that's not always the case, you know. Mm. You know, some managers, it's a profession. It's another appointment. It's another opportunity. But with Marcelino, he looks absolutely delighted to be manager of Athletic. And it's rubbing off on the players. So, you know, it was they had to come back at the end of the game to get that late equaliser from Via Libre. Again, another fault of Jordi Alba defending the set piece at the near post, when it inexplicably ducked.
I thought he stumbled. I thought he just lost his footing, which made it... There's no explanation for him ducking under the ball otherwise, is there?
I mean, he had a remarkable game in the fact he was involved in both Barcelona's goals and the first two for Athletic. So it was... I thought Athletic, the possession was pretty even. They weren't dominated, but they didn't sit back and defend and... You know, they were good defensively. They worked hard in midfield. And ultimately, they carried a bigger threat than Barcelona in attack. And, you know, the winning goal from Iñaki Williams was a worthy of winning any game and any competition. We just need to see that more from him now. So hopefully, from his point of view and Athletic supporters, that will improve his confidence. I think he'd be a better player now for being in a settled position as well. And getting to learn that job, learn that trade, and you know, whether it's going to be Raúl García or Via Libre who plays alongside him remains to be seen. But it was all the news is good for Athletic Club, the celebrations afterwards, the build-up as well. There's some interesting stuff on social media about them. You know, supporters being at their hotel, which is not the thing to do at the moment, but, you know, the Basques are all around Spain, so I'm assuming they were local in Sevilla and went along to cheer the players onto the team bus. You know, the celebrations back in the hotel afterwards, which were they still social distanced. You saw the good footage of the inside the hotel with the flags of Athletic Club and the Basque region around the hotel. So they embraced it, you know, I think a lot more than the other clubs. And maybe the fact Real Sociedad are in Europe and they're chasing you know, Champions League, whereas Athletic Club have got a new manager, they're mid-table, and, you know, they still haven't played the cup final from last year. I think they saw it amongst the four clubs as a genuine chance to be title holders. And, you know, to their credit, they are.
It's a funny one, the social distancing, isn't it? Because, you know, in the grand scheme of what is spreading this virus, it's not footballers hugging each other, is it? And, you know, that's a vanishingly small part of it. But at the same time, football fans, we're not a separate breed of people, are we? You know, you sort of abide by the rules to the extent. So when you see fans turning up, it's just easy to think, no, just, honestly, just go on. Just be sensible for now. It's not going to last forever, is it?
I'm looking forward to supporters coming back in.
Oh, yeah, it'd be so much
fun. I must admit, I saw some of the Copa del Rey game between Sporting and Betis yesterday, and there was a decent amount of supporters in the stadium.
Yeah.
Socially distanced. They probably had about, I would say, 7 to 10 seats between each person. And I don't see what's wrong with that. I'm watching the NFL. There was 9,000 in the Green Bay Packers game. Yeah. The other night, so spread out amongst a stadium that holds 90,000. So I'm hoping that sooner or later, you know, be it in the Premier League, be it in La Liga, if they can do it in the Copa del Rey, then, you know, why can't we have, you know, a few thousand people in a stadium and hopefully everyone behaving themselves and making sure that a lot of people can enjoy the experience again before we eventually, one day we will get back to full capacity. So it's, I mean, that stadium the Super Cup was in is massive. Weird, I did particularly enjoy it, yeah, watching it on an athletics track again and stuff like that. But hopefully one day soon that the supporters will be back in the stadiums and people can enjoy their football again. I'm fed up with the experience now, watching empty stadiums, I must say.
Yeah. Yes, it was the lack of experience, isn't it? Yeah. Right. Some questions then from our Patreons. So, Stuart, that's a good question. Morning, fellas. Obviously, amazing couple of results for Marcelino at Athletic. When you take over coaching at a club, where do you begin? Is it all about motivation and lifting players?
Mostly it is, because 9 times out of 10, you've got a job based on the fact things are not going great. There are odd occasions where a manager might leave for a better opportunity because he's done such a good job, and a manager comes in, has to take over, and then you're looking for continuity. You're looking at, you know, if not broke, don't fix it. It's that simple, you know. But most times a manager goes into a club which is in disarray, the team are suffering, the players haven't got confidence. So first and foremost, that is the thing you're looking at. As I said earlier in this podcast, you players look to make a good first impression. That's a natural, you know, reaction to make as a player. You don't have any, unless you've had previous experience with a manager, it's probably someone new you're working with, and be it the first training session, the first game, you know, the first week, the first couple of weeks, you want to be, you know, give a good impression to that manager in the hope that he's going to pick you. That's whether you've been starting or whether you've been, you know, discarded and not getting a game. So I think that's one of the main factors. And also then, as a new manager going into a team that's suffering, you have to have that, you have to command, you have to be a general. You have to, you know, try and get the players to embrace you and believe in what you're telling them. And you have to, in order to do that, you have to come across as someone basically who knows what they're doing. So you have to earn that trust straight away. And the players, in fairness, are looking for someone to trust. They don't want to be in the doldrums. They don't want to be getting beat every week. They don't want to read the negative press reports and hear the negative stuff in social media. They want to be successful as well. So if someone comes in and has a clear plan, and it has to be, you know, short and concise, it doesn't have to be long. You just need someone to come in as a new manager, and you walk out that first meeting or that first training session, and you think, this guy knows what he's doing. You know, that's the start. So that's the start you need. You don't want to go into a meeting as a new manager and start umming and ahhing and thinking, I might be, you know, telling the players, we might do this, we might do that. And the players walking out after that first meeting and going, he hasn't got a plan. You know, and that happens. It's happened to me. So I think players on that first initial meeting need someone to come in and lead them. and, you know, also almost declared to them that your troubles are over, you know, listen to me, follow me, this is what I do, this is what I'm doing, and this is what I expect, and together we'll go forward and onwards and upwards. It is basic, you know, it's dealing with human emotion. So I think a lot of it is that, two or three games down the line, if things haven't gone well, then, you know, it's a different scenario. But first and foremost, that will be what Marcelino has done. He's gone in and told the players they're a good squad. This is my plan, 4-4-2 from day one. And the players are quite happy to latch onto that because they've been suffering.
Richard's question, what can Marcelino do with Via Libre? The raw materials are there. Can he become the number nine for years to come?
Not the number nine in the traditional sense for Athletic Club. That's clear. I mean, he's not 6 foot. He needs another 8 inches, you know, to become the Llorente, Adairs, Ismael size before that. So that's been 20 years of centre forwards that have been over 6 foot tall. But he is a good player. And can he link with Iñaki Williams? I think so, yes. There'll have to be a slight change of style in the way that Athletic Club play. But I think I agree with Richard that he does have the raw materials. He has a good striker's instinct. He works hard. He holds the ball up well if it's played into his feet. His movement is good. He's got decent pace. So I think the promise is there, the potential is there for him and Williams to be able to form a partnership. Other than that, you've got Raul Garcia, who's the other option, who's a bit more in the classic traditional centre-forward style, purely only because of his size. Raul Garcia hasn't always been a centre-forward. So I think the options are pretty good. And, you know, I think Via Libre is a good player. Good goal. He exploited that space at the near post. His movement was good. Anticipation was good. Sharpness was good. And finished it off really well. So I think the potential is there, Richard.
Philip, he said it in two parts. I think his irritation shone through. Fair to say that Barca played rather well without Messi. Pretty absent in the final. And the real problem is still the defending. But then he went on to say, seems pretty obvious that Alba is arrogant and prone to break under pressure. However, is it fair to say that Barca has always had that problem? The real problem in the final was that Pedri went missing. He was pretty useless against the athleticism and physicality of Athletic Club. So a two-part question there, isn't it? Pedri's performance in that particular game and also, you know, Barca and the defending.
Yeah, we have to be careful with Pedri. He's 18.
Yeah.
I mean, he's playing an awful lot of football. And if he's slightly quieter than normal, that shouldn't be unexpected. It shouldn't be a surprise. And then we saw Ricky Puig came on, who's similar in terms of stature. And I thought he got involved in the game. So I don't think it was a clash of the big players of Athletic Club, you know, dominating a smaller Pedri. I think it was a slightly jaded Pedri, you know, maybe that he's feeling the pace of playing and being an important player for Barcelona, and he was slightly quieter than normal. Don't think he played badly, just quieter than normal. So that's something that's, you know, Barcelona are going to have to be aware of, that he is only 18 years of age, playing every game. They're going to have to judge that to see, you know, how he's shaping up in training and stuff like that, because tiredness will take a toll on a player that's still developing. Jordi Alba, I can be critical of his performance last night because I actually thought he pulled out, ducked, you know. I know you think he stumbled. The first one, he has no idea De Marcos is behind him. The first he knows of it is when De Marcos just nips in and taps him from close range, and then Jordi Alba is looking around for hoping there's an offside, and there wasn't. So that was really poor defending from Jordi Alba. The contribution to the two goals was really good from Jordi Alba. He's a phenomenal footballer. He's been a phenomenal player for Barcelona. We have to temper that with the fact that everybody makes mistakes. Everybody has bad games. But the evidence we talked about recently about Barcelona on the way, you know, they're back to their best. I did temper it with the fact that I said I still need more evidence because this game is still in there. They were pretty impotent in attack. Apart from Griezmann, who played well and took his goals well, and they lacked defensive solidity. And then as the game went on, Koeman started making changes, and that's one of my criticisms of Koeman so far, and is when he does make changes, they don't seem to work, and it gets untidy. And at the end of the game, there was players playing all over the place. So I think that was the issue with Barcelona last night. I'm slightly surprised at Umtiti, having played against Granada when he wasn't meant to. Araujo got injured in the warm-up. And Umtiti came in and was excellent. We haven't seen him since. So I'm slightly surprised that there hasn't been more of an effort from Koeman to get in a genuinely world-class centre-half back in the starting lineup. Yeah. No matter how well Longley and Araujo and Oscar Mingueza do, a fit and informed Umtiti makes Barcelona better. So I'm slightly surprised that he hasn't tried to, after that game against Granada, try to give him more minutes, you know, to try and get more. And these two games were ideal. It's a Super Cup. I get that. It's not the most important trophy in the calendar for Barcelona or Real Madrid. They'll be disappointed that they didn't win it. But I think it was an ideal opportunity to try and get more minutes under Umtiti's belt, because I think they would be better. Now, he might not get there. He may not recover that form, but I really don't see why.
Give him a chance.
Yeah, give him a chance and, you know, try and get him up to match speed on a regular basis. Then I think that makes Barcelona better. So defensively, still plenty of questions to ask. I'm surprised Dest went off and Mingueza came on half-time. I'm not sure if there was an injury issue or just, you know, Koeman just went with perhaps a more defensive player than Dest. So there are, you know, as I said, the evidence isn't clear yet that Barcelona are back to the very best. And then we have to discuss Messi quickly.
Yes. So, red card then. Villa Libre runs across his path. He gets annoyed, doesn't he? And as I think, it's not quite a right hook. His technique in football is tremendous. His technique at fighting is not the best, is it? It's a bit of a flat arm across the back of his head, isn't it? But he had to go, didn't he?
Yeah, he did it earlier, actually. Yeah. Exactly the same, but didn't make full contact. That time, it was in the box. The classic ball out to Jordi Alba. And he then makes that darting run across the near post, you know, on a slight angle for the cutback. And an athletic player run across him. And he barged him out of the way. Yeah. That was ignored. So I think it was a tactic that Athletic were willing to use. Villa Libre was totally innocent in this.
Oh, yeah.
He did what he had to do. He runs across. There's a shoulder bulge. He knows Messi's going to play a give and go. So maybe something Marcelino, advised them to do. Yeah. If Messi plays that little pass and then makes that darting run, get across him, try and block his run. That's all Villa Libre was doing. I'm not saying for one second that Villa Libre did everything he could to get Messi sent off. He just did a tactic where he didn't want Messi playing the ball, following his pass, so he cut across him. There was a shoulder barge, wasn't there, between the two of them, and then Messi clear. Yeah, but as soon as it happened, I thought, that's a red card. Have they got the courage to refer it to VAR? You saw the VAR studio, and they looked really excited, didn't they? that it was not only a red card, it was Messi, and it was clear once you saw the evidence. He had to go. It summed up his frustration, I think, with his own performance, with the team's performance, and his frustration with trying to make those runs and getting blocked off. And you know, he's human. He showed his frustration in a way that we don't normally see, and he was punished. I don't know what the suspension's going to be. I'm seeing all sorts in the Spanish press.
I read three games
longer
across the next three games, whatever that, you know. So it's not the who was it years ago who got banned from the Super Cup?
And that was it. That was only
ever was in the Super Cup, wasn't it? So yeah. But I think they cottoned on to that finally.
They
play once a year.
And then I think Fede Valverde got sent off last year, I think.
Yeah.
When he had a kick out at someone.
Yeah.
And his ban was it domestically as well. Now I'm reading that Messi is getting a two-game La Liga ban and a two-game Copa del Rey ban, which...
Oh, okay. So I read one... So three games.
They want him hung, drawn, and quartered.
Yeah.
Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we'll see. I read the two Copa del Rey games that they got, because they have Copa del Rey midweek, haven't they?
Yeah.
And then weekend La Liga, and then the next Copa del Rey round. But we'll see. We'll see. But they'll miss him.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the worst thing in the world for the guy to get a bit more rest, is it?
Not only that. Yeah, he came into this on the back of missing the semi-final.
He did, yeah.
And it was touch and go whether he was going to play. I have to be honest, he didn't look particularly sharp and fit last night. So whether he was carrying that injury or not. And then once you start him, you can't take him off. Hmm. I mean, you're looking at a player that can, you know, win you the game in extra time and stuff like that with a free kick, with a bit of magic, a goal, a pass, a dribble. So you can't take him off. But he did look 100% fit. So maybe, you know, that will give him a little mid-season break. But Barcelona, you know, clearly miss him when he's not there. And he wasn't there last night, unfortunately, for Barcelona.
Yeah. Copa del Rey, so we are missing quite a lot of La Liga teams, aren't we? If I'm right, Atletico and Celta are already gone. Eibar, Elche, Cadiz and Alaves all joined them this weekend. Let's be frank, I haven't watched these games, so I don't know whether it was a question of prioritising games and not, you know, prioritise given how wide open La Liga is at the moment. One notable one, Terry, which takes us on also into the managerial changes, was that Alaves result against Almeria, which was shocking, wasn't it? So Abelardo is the new manager of Alaves because they sacked Machin, if you haven't been keeping up with that. And what a start, 0-5.
Incredible. Almeria going well in second division, so they're obviously a decent side. But as a new manager, that's a disastrous start. I checked the team to see if there was any people in it I recognised, and I recognised them all. So I'm not convinced it was the strongest 11, but it weren't far off it. So that would be a crushing blow. It was 4 down pretty early on as well. So I think that goes to show the size of the task at Alaves for Abelardo. And, you know, they are a team that's in a relegation battle. It may not have been the worst result in the world if they'd gone out, say, 1-0 or 2-1. But to go out, you know, in the way they did.
Given what you said about, in answer to Stuart's question about how you start with authority and you start by making sure everybody thinks they know what you're doing. You know, 5-0 home, you know, 5-0, not home, but a 5-0 defeat against a lower division, you know, team from the division below is not a good start, is it? And the other
But he can use that. He can use that to his advantage.
Yeah.
He can turn around now and say, look, genuinely, that's how bad you are. Yeah. So hang on to my every word. You know, and we'll be all right. Our main priority is surviving again in La Liga and start again. So it's almost, it reinforces, this can reinforce the players having to, you know, look at him and think, you know, be our general, lead us, and, you know, we'll follow you. The players can't turn around now and say, he doesn't know what he's doing after one game.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to, it just will, you know, focus their minds a little bit more that they are pretty bad this season.
And the other managerial change was at Huesca, where Michel got the shove. We discussed this for the Patreons at the back end of last week, didn't we? But so Pacheta came in, who was the guy who got Elche. He got Elche there both of their promotions, I think, didn't he? That's right.
Yep.
And then weirdly they sacked him. So
yep.
It's a bit like Bordalas went to Hetafe, but he had to then get them up as well, didn't he? But you sort of feel a guy deserves a crack at the top division.
100%. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, it's an interesting choice. They obviously see in there a manager that can get a job done. In his case, he's been, in terms of, you know, getting teams up. And now he's got the task in half a season, there's plenty of time left, to try and keep Huesca in the top division. The writing on the wall was there clearly for Michel. I saw some interviews where he came across, he wasn't leading. He kept using the word scared he was going to lose his job, scared that he was going to lose games, scared that his players would lose confidence. And I, to the patrons, sorry, repeating it, and I did a La Liga, Viva La Liga program with Gus Poyet, and they played an interview after the game. And that was his interview. I'm scared of losing my job. I'm scared that, you know, my players are losing confidence. I'm scared that we're going to lose games. And me and Gus Poyet both looked at each other. When the camera came back on us after the interview, we both had exactly the same expression on our face and Albert Ferrer. That's not the way to lead a team that's suffering. So the previous defeat, the next defeat against Betis, That was the final straw for the people at Huesca. So they need someone to come in who's bright, breezy, can set a different climate in terms of a manager. That's what you do. And you need to be upbeat and you need to be positive. You don't need to... After the Betis game, half the players were crying.
Yeah.
They lost 2-0 at home to Betis and half of them were crying in tears. The manager was almost in tears. And I'm thinking, this is a team that's got half a season to play. It looked like it was the last game of the season and they'd just been relegated. And you can't have that. You've got no chance of surviving if that is the mentality. So they need a new outlook and hopefully they get it with a new manager.
So we need a little break for the podcasters before you go to your break. And I'm going to show this on this. Now, this is on the screen. I keep forgetting to plug the book, Terry. I need to plug the book. So it's the 50 Football's Most Influential Players by John Driscoll. There we are. So there we are. So podcasters, you need to buy it as well. I'm showing it to the Patreons, but imagine they've already bought it. Yes. So anyway, so there we are. Buy my book. If you are in the UK armed forces or any relatives are, get with Terry and his wife about your apparel. And
I need one in the background.
Yes, you do. Yes, and we'll, you know, fingers crossed now that there are some adverts. Here we go. Welcome back to the podcasters. I hope you had an advert. That would be exciting, wouldn't it? Right. So this is the one that Terry's been desperate to get this off your chest. We've had this a few weeks now. I noted with interest, Terry, I haven't fact checked this, but 2 in 32. Who does that ring a bell? Luka Jovic. 2 goals in 32 games for Real Madrid. 2 goals in 32 minutes
yeah.
on his return to Frankfurt. Which would suggest that the guy is not a dummy. His confidence, of course, may have gone, but there's a thing, isn't there, with Zidane and trusting footballers. We don't want to be there 5 years' time and Real Madrid's core is still Ramos, Modric.
Casemiro, Modric and Kroos in midfield. Yeah, yeah. Ramos and Varane at the back. Yeah. And Marcelo at left back. Benzema up front, of course. No, there are some issues with Real Madrid, and it's been brought to the fore because of some disappointing results. And also the fact, I think we forget, they're not made of money, Real Madrid. I know they have been in the past, but they've got players now that they've spent a lot of money on that Zidane isn't using. So his decisions now are costing the club in terms of finances. Jovic was big money, barely played. Militao is another one as well that costs somewhere around 50 million. And as soon as Varane or Ramos are injured, who plays instead? Nacho. So there's not even the trust there from Zidane to play a player when they have an injury in that position. The media are slightly concerned he's losing faith in some of the younger ones that they brought in. Vinicius and Rodrigo are not playing as much as they were. And Martin Odegaard in particular, Martin Odegaard and Fede Valverde as a pair as well. So, you know, Valverde didn't cost a fortune, but his value was, you know, increasing rapidly, rightly so. Odegaard's value last year was extremely high as well. So Vinicius and Rodrigo come in at big money too. So there is an element of, from a business sense as well, is it the right thing for Zidane to do? It leads you to, you know, to the, did he want those players brought in? There's a whole list of players. Not a whole list, but James gone. Bale gone, but I think he'll be back. And then you're looking at other ones in the past. We've mentioned Ashraf Hakimi.
Yeah. They still owed money for him, by the way, but the Inter haven't paid.
And they're not getting it.
Yeah.
Sergio Reguilon. That they could have been included if Zidane, I think they have a value to Real Madrid. Hakimi and Reguilon came through the youth ranks. They chose to go and spend 30 million on Drizola, who we never see. And then to sell Hakimi, I think, for slightly less than that. So that was quite bizarre. And Reguilon never got an opportunity under Zidane after impressing, actually. And then at Real Madrid, impressing at Sevilla, came back and was always going to be sold because they just spent slightly more on Fernando Mendy. So there's a business interest in it from Real Madrid's perspective, but also I think from a player perspective, I don't feel under Zidane sometimes. There's in the confidence and trust is lack of it is clear to see, but I don't think there's genuine competition for places enough sometimes for Real Madrid. And what you then get is the complacency we see from time to time. So players at the big clubs like Real Madrid, they need to be, you know, when I say big clubs like Real Madrid, the big, you know, arguably the biggest amongst the world, they need to be, you know, don't need a guarantee of, well, I can, you know, cruise through these games. Not, you know, the manager's not going to drop me. There's no one pushing for my place. There is Mariano Diaz, Brahim Diaz. Brahim Diaz, I mean, strange career. In fact, he never cracked it at Man City. Went to Real Madrid, which was a strange transfer, but £17 million, I think it was. And the early signs was, you know, he's pretty good. Less than half the price of Vinicius and Rodrigo, but never given an opportunity and now playing well at Milan. So it can be costly in so many different ways for Zidane. You know, in terms of it doesn't get the best out of the squad. Odegaard is, you know, exasperated with the fact that at the start of the season, Zidane seemed to, and he does this quite often, he seemed to have faith in him, didn't he? But he can easily lose it. And that's
so, the big question then is why, isn't it? And I know you can't know for certain the answer, because unless you were there he must sit and discuss it with the coaching staff, mustn't he, and make these decisions on people. Because we saw Valverde, and everyone thought he'd arrived. No, they thought he was part of the Real Madrid setup. We saw Odegaard do so well last season at Real Sociedad. He came back, and again, it was, you know, they chose to bring him back, didn't they? He could have stayed the season. With the Brazilians, you sort of think, I can see more of a case for in and out.
Yes, but, I can.
Yeah, but. So why? What happens to him? Why does he lose trust in people seemingly so easily?
And allow players to play when they're playing bad.
Yeah.
That's the other side of it. It's not just losing trust with players, it's putting too much trust in other players. I don't know. Perhaps he likes to... I joked, didn't I, but when they won it in 16-17, the Champions League and the league, they had an A team and a B team, and the B team was outrageous. And I've joked that he didn't like it because there was too many. I can understand that to a degree. You don't want half a squad get the ump with you every day. But as a manager, you have to live with that. You can't please everyone in every game. Everybody wants to play every match. But there are methods of, you know, making sure that players still feel they're important to the squad, to the cause, keeping them involved. Then they think that, not so much he trusts me, it's he doesn't not trust me, if that makes more sense. You know, you feel that you're going to get an opportunity and you know, some of these players, they're not getting the opportunities that they deserve. He's even reluctant to make the changes as well. You know, it's quite often with five subs allowed, he'll only make one or two and they'll be towards the end of the game. So it's quite interesting how his method of managing is. He's gone with the old guard again, apart from Marcelo coming out, Mondi going in, the rest of the team, and Hazard has got to, you know, do more to justify his starting place in the lineup. I understand why Zidane might be showing more patience with him. He has no choice, to be perfectly honest. In order to try and get the best out of Hazard. That's a big issue for Real Madrid. He's nowhere near the player he was for so long at Chelsea.
Let's do Paul's question. Paul Campbell says, if I presented very kindly a £10,000 prize for correctly guessing the top four and bottom three by the end of the season, who would you pick?
I would go for the same top four as last year.
Yeah, it doesn't specify whether we need it in order. I think the top four is relatively easy to pick, isn't it? But
I'm not sure about Villarreal.
Yeah.
No, I think Villarreal can make a challenge.
Yeah.
But if I was pushed, I'd still think that Sevilla just have that edge on Villarreal in terms of top four.
And we put you. I'm guessing you're putting Barca third.
Don't know.
All right. Okay.
Only because of the nature of Barcelona this year. I don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
they could be fourth.
Yeah.
They could be second. They could win it. I think it's Atletico are not that far away yet that it's all over.
Yeah.
And I don't know what Barcelona, because in the past we can confidently say this is what Barcelona are. Normally it's been good. This year it's been hit and miss. You know, mistakes in the Super Cup, but they were playing well in the league. Messi was in great form in the league. Griezmann's back to form. But then we see the lack of defensive qualities again. With Real Madrid, I think they're not out of the title race yet either. So I still think if you were pushing me at this stage, Atletico should be clear favourites. Midweek game coming up, which is another one of their games in hand. If they win that, they stretch their lead away again, and then we're starting counting down the games, to be honest, with such a lead they have. And we expect Barcelona and Real Madrid to drop points throughout the season anyway. So Atletico Madrid, but that would be my top four. Probably a push now, Atletico first. The other three, I'm not so sure, and maybe Villarreal with an outside chance of Champions League football next season.
Okay. I hope that's three. Clear enough for the £10,000 prize. But
we don't expect that generosity from all our patrons, but it's more than grateful.
That's very top tier, that, isn't it? £10,000. Right, bottom yes, three.
Bottom three.
Got to work for the money.
I would go Huesca.
Yeah.
I kept saying Cadiz. But I think they're not far away. They have to be a really big slump now. So I will go with Elche, I think.
Yeah.
And I've seen signs in recent weeks that perhaps they need some more work in the transfer window. And even though they've changed their manager, I think Alaves are in trouble.
So you think Osasuna will be okay? You're not necessarily saying that.
No. If I was Ari Danny Hernandez at centre-half, I wouldn't be thinking, oh, Terry Gibson said we're all right now. No, there's plenty of work for them to do, for Valladolid, for Eibar. Getafe, we expect, to be okay and to push up the league. So they would be my bottom three prediction at the moment.
Yes. Right, so there is a midweek round of games. So hang on, I'll do the old technology thing again for the Patreon. So you got to share screen, stick it on the BBC, good old BBC, and share.
Could you be not sharing my screen after watching last night?
Yes, you might need to do the old sweep.
I've got to buy a new laptop.
yes, so there we are. I just have a quick check of what I'm sharing. The BBC, credit to the BBC. Gets a lot of stick, the BBC. Their website, brilliant. Everything's so clear, no adverts on it, because adverts are there are lots of people working really well on good stuff in the media. Their pages are unreadable because of the adverts taking so long to load. There we are, good old BBC. So Cadiz versus Levante, this is Tuesday. Valladolid versus Elche, Alaves versus Sevilla. Wednesday, Getafe, Huesca. Betis, Celta, Villarreal, Granada. Thursday finishes that round, doesn't it? Yeah, because then Friday's the next round, so it never ends. Valencia, Osasuna, Eibar versus Atletico, which I guess then, Terry, makes that the biggest game, doesn't it, that one for Atletico?
It does, because, they've got an opportunity to stretch their lead. We've been talking for so long now about the games in hand. They've already played one of those, and they got the win against Sevilla, and now they've got the away game against Eibar. And if they can win this, before the weekend's round of games, then they are in a commanding position. What other games are there? There's some relegation ones there, actually, that are worth a look at. I mean, Cadiz, Levante could be a mid-table one, could be still be, two teams fighting for their lives at the end of the season. Valladolid at home to Elche is another good one. Alaves, Abelardo coming off the back of his first game and losing 5-0, face Sevilla. In his first La Liga game, that's not going to be an easy game for Alaves, not for Sevilla, if I'm being honest. They're not the type of team that go away and run away with it, are they, and win 3 or 4 nil. But they're hard to beat. Getafe, Huesca, tough start for the new Huesca manager away to Getafe, who showed slight signs of changing style in their last game, with Kubo playing and one or two others, and Carlos Alenia coming in. Portillo was playing in that game, so it was a really different style from Getafe. Betis-Celta, both teams are mid-table and looking to just slightly push forward. Valencia-Osasuna is another one that we could declare as a bit of a six-pointer, a relegation battle, and then finishing, of course, on Thursday, the last game of the programme of Eibar, who struggled at home against Atletico Madrid. So big game, massive game for Atletico. Really can, you know, put themselves well away from Real Madrid, Barcelona, Sevilla, Villarreal, Real Sociedad, etc. So it's a good midweek programme.
Yep, and Copa del Rey for the other teams. This is the round. There was the round before Christmas where the Super Copa teams played each other in a little midweek round, because that's because they're all in cup action on Wednesday, Thursday. So Cordoba versus Real Sociedad, Alcoyano against Real Madrid, Ibiza against Athletic, and Cornea against Barcelona, the traditional Catalan.
Yep, the celebrations for Athletic, pretty good there, aren't they? They've gone from Sevilla in Andalusia to decent weather, decent climate. Now they're off to Ibiza to continue their celebrations, and Villa Libre to continue his trumpet playing on the Balearic Islands now, taking it on tour.
Yes. The Athletic Club brass band. We're only one member at the moment. The rest of them are just dancers.
There is a band. There is a band now. There's about four or five of them. They have a band.
Oh, right. Okay, cool.
I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm not sure the name of it. Mm. It's Basque for offside.
Right.
So if that helps anybody, in Villa Libre is the trumpet player, obviously. I think I remember at Ibiza, just last bit, they played Athletic Club, I think a few years ago in the Copa del Rey, and it was on a national turf pitch with about eight different pitches marked out on it.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, when you have the lines of the five side pitches going across the pitch and on a full size pitch, and I'm wondering whether that's going to be the same, whether I've got it that's completely wrong, but that's what the Copa del Rey brings. I saw Valencia's game at the weekend, Municipal Stadium, only appeared to have one stand. They shoveled the snow off it appeared to be only sort of briefly a playable pitch that might have been astro turf. So it comes with its obstacle, playing in these early rounds in the Copa del Rey.
Right, so enjoy your football. We will be back for the Patreons later in the week, probably having a look back at all of this, and we'll be back with another regular podcast next Monday, Tuesday. We'll see you for that.